Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Happy Project Podcast. My name is Becky, and sitting across the table is Cedric Skycetti. Hi, Cedric.
Hello, Becky.
Ew, I don't like it. I felt it the moment I said your name that it was weird.
Yeah, for those of you guys that don't know, we don't call each other by our names.
No.
It's very weird.
It's bizarre. We have different names for each other. Nice names, like nicknames, cute names. I just want to make sure people know that. Like, we're not just, you know, saying, hey, Derek. Like, we have cute pet names for each other. Okay, I think they got that. Well, anyway, we are here to talk about... you're ruining my flow.
Your face. You look very scared and disturbed.
I'm neither. Hey. I'm sorry. Okay, is there any lipstick on my teeth? Okay. Let me come back and do that again.
Are you crying?
I don't know what's happening. Oh, I think I'm nervous. Well, today's topic is we're going to debunk a couple of myths about Korea. Five myths to be exact. And we're going to talk through them. What are they? Maybe why did they get started? Why are they still perpetuated today? And are they true or not? I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Do you know any Korean stereotypes?
Yeah, of course.
Before we did this episode research?
Yeah, of course.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I mean, there's Korean stereotypes, and then there's Asian stereotypes where they lump all Asians together because to a lot of people, like, all Asians are the same.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there are similarities. So I heard a lot of stuff growing up.
Like what?
Obviously, Asians are smart. Mm-hmm. They study hard, and Asians are sort of the... like the token members of society. Mm-hmm. Like they're the quiet, humble, just hardworking people. Mm-hmm. Asians are the ones that own all the dry cleaners and the black beauty supply stores, things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of ironic about the smart one. My sister in high school, she was super smart. I mean, she's still smart, but she was like up there. And then we shared one year in high school where she was senior and I was a freshman. And that year, everybody was asking me, oh, hey, little Kim. They called me little Kim after my sister. Hey, little Kim. So are you going to be in calculus by sophomore year too? And I was like, no. I was the antithesis of my sister in that regard. So it's funny when I look at it and everyone's like, oh, all Asians are good at math. And I was like, where did I fall into this category? But this is what we're here to prove. We're here to break those stereotypes, to prove that we are not humble, quiet, or hardworking.
I like that.
But no, we're going to debunk some stereotypes here. And there are some stereotypes that might feel outrageous to some people. And then there are probably a few that might lean more on the side of reality than we would think. But we're just going to look at them from an unbiased point of view. And hopefully we can get some understanding on why these stereotypes exist. So, Cedric, why don't you say the first one?
Stereotype one, or myth number one, is Koreans eat dog.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think about that?
It's kind of true. Okay. But, like, in general, no, Koreans do not eat dog, at least these days.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, to my surprise, actually, after I moved here, it still happens in certain areas here. And actually, I moved to Daejeon, which is sort of a central city in Korea, for my first year. And there was actually a restaurant that served dog meat. And I thought it was a joke when my friend told me that, but like it was legit.
Yeah.
And so I would say that most of the population... They don't.
Yeah.
And as a matter of fact, especially like people our age or younger, they're all repulsed by it.
Yeah.
But even like older generations too.
Historically, dogs were regarded as farm animals here in Korea. And if we look at the historical context, where did this begin? The closest that I could find as an origin story was during the Japanese occupation in Korea. And that was a really hard time for the Korean people. And there was some near starvation years. And so, especially after this, then we had World War II, the Korean War. Korea was devastated and a very impoverished country during those times. And so in those moments, of course, you're led by desperation to finding a food source. And there were many dogs around. And so I'm thinking this is probably where it began. And now it is still kind of held on by, one, the belief that the energy found in dog, I guess. It's like this warm energy that you need to eat if you're feeling unwell. This is something I've read. And also because it is now sort of classified as traditional. So there would, of course, be pushback to trying to get rid of something that is considered traditional. It's a bit controversial. So as far as I can see, there's no legal consequences for selling dog meat. Though it's always during the Olympics, when we had the 1988 Seoul Summer Olympics, and then recently in 2018, the Pyeongchang Winter Olympics, the government tried to stop restaurants that were selling dog meat because they knew international view is going to come and then point fingers.
Yeah, their PR game was strong during the Olympics.
Like, always. Yes. So that was, you know, governments were trying to stop restaurants from selling dog meat. They didn't want to be criticized. It was especially in the 1988 Summer Olympics. This is where the international community really pressured Korea to stop that. And then, of course, Korea was accusing them, hey, you're trying to force imperialism on us, which makes sense if you look historically, Korea was, you know, they would want to fight any outside imperialism. And so then they objected with that. And I actually heard that then there was a big rush of everyone suddenly eating dog meat as kind of to prove a point. Like, you can't stop us. This is our tradition, mm-hmm. which feels a little bit petulant. But, you know, that happened. And at this moment, I think we still Indonesia, Vietnam, China, South Korea, Cambodia, Laos, and the Philippines occasionally still do serve dog meat in some places. But again, especially today, it's really not a widespread practice. And the government has done a lot in the recent years to shut down these dog farms.
Right. Yeah. And I could only recall just that one instance of that restaurant in Daejeon mm-hmm. that served dog meat. And it'd be interesting to know if they're still actually doing that now.
Yeah. It's not common at all.
Yeah. So you're not going to go down the street and go to any random restaurant and see dog meat on the menu.
Right.
You're just not. And so I think a big part of the, I guess, changing of perspective, especially like these days, is like pets are very much becoming more accepted mm-hmm. in Korean society, especially mm-hmm. dogs. Mm-hmm. Cats are, I think, kind of becoming more accepted, but I think dogs especially. A lot of Koreans have dogs, and so you can't imagine eating your furry
that's
friend.
The
There's
thing.
Just no
yeah.
way. So I think that's just sort of a phased out tradition.
I think so too. In a 2014 poll, it did show that most people rarely ate dog meat at that time. And then now, here in 2017, another poll that came out by the Humane Society International said at least 70% of people disapprove of eating dog. And that was in mm-hmm. 2017. And even more so now, young Korean advocates, because this is the difference when people are trying to abolish this practice from the outside in versus from the inside out. So now a lot of young Koreans are advocating for the abolishment of dog farms. And of course, pets are becoming more popular. We can see this in the huge rise of apartments and complexes that now allow people to raise pets indoors. This is reflecting society's mindset about dogs overall as a change. So I honestly think it's just going to be phased out eventually.
Yeah.
Which for me sure. is a good thing.
Definitely.
I love dogs. You know that. Well, let's move on to the next myth.
Yes, the next myth is Koreans study all day and all night.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think about that, sir?
Well, I feel like, in general, yeah, it's quite true, to mm-hmm. be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
I think because of Korea really putting such an importance on education, especially like formal education,
mm-hmm.
And couple that with the competitive nature of society, yeah, there's like tons of studying.
Mm-hmm.
I have some thoughts on like the effectiveness of it, but
Oh, okay. Yeah
in general you have kids who grew up in school mm-hmm. like normal, say for example public school mm-hmm. and then so they study hard there, they have their homework, And for many people outside of school, you have what's known as Hagwon, which are private academies, which are basically after school classes or tutoring.
Yeah.
And it's just extra studying. And some of these kids will go to these Hagwons after their school, and they'll go there for a few more hours until like 10.
Yeah. To 10 p.m. at night. Can you imagine?
I think it used to be later. And I think it used to be on the weekends too. But I think Korea changed that.
Yeah,
in recent years. But yeah, I mean, this one I can't really debunk, to be honest, because it's true.
Mm-hmm. There's kind of a, it's almost like a factory setting that happens. Okay, you went to Yuchiwan, you went to kindergarten, and a lot of times starting in kindergarten, they'll send them to English-speaking kindergartens because they want their kids from an early age to start speaking English. And then, you know, moving on to school, and then sometimes even in middle school, you have to make this decision. Okay, which path are you going to take? What's going to be your future vocation? Mm-hmm. And then you're dedicating all your study in high school to prepare for this exam, the Suneng, right? Because you have to pass that exam to get into the proper university, which will then dictate what kind of office job you can get, which will then dictate the level of success that you will have in society. So already from this very young age, there's a lot of pressure put on you to study well, to get into the right school so that you can live a safe, secure life.
Mm-hmm.
Because, Korean society did put a lot of emphasis on education and still puts a lot of emphasis on education. So can we debunk this myth? Not exactly. But I would like to say something we can debunk is it's not that all of these Korean students are like loving study that they're studying.
Mm.
It is simply because the incentive.
And it's not that all these Korean students are smart either. Because some of them...
Right.
Yeah. I mean, so yeah, I think the system is set up to where you would benefit from studying all day and all night. And sometimes you just don't have a choice, but it doesn't mean that everyone enjoys it. It doesn't mean that everyone succeeds under that type of system. Some people, when they get older, they might rebel against it or they'll try to even leave Korea to maybe go to the States or New Zealand or Canada to maybe try to study there to get away from this sort of system that's set up here.
Right. Okay. So that one was semi-debunked. How about the next one?
Korean people love K-pop.
Oh my gosh, K-pop. Big K-pop fans in the house. Are you a K-pop? Well, you were.
I were. I was.
Yeah.
And I kind of am in a sense of like what K-pop has done because I was there from the very beginning. Yeah, I was there from literally not day one, but like
K-pop.
I was like from 1994, 93, 94 is when I first got into it. And K-pop just became a thing. And it wasn't even called K-pop at the time, I don't
think. Yeah, it was Kayo.
Yeah, it was just, you know, popular music.
Mm-hmm.
It was the music for the young kids. Yeah, so I, from that perspective, I am a fan. But this notion that Korean people all love K-pop, I don't think that's true. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people... they're proud of what K-pop is now globally, but I think K-pop fans abroad are far more fanatic than people in Korea.
Yeah, I will agree.
Yeah, I think even a lot of people in Korea, they don't even, they'll go out of their way to tell you, no, I don't like K-pop.
Yes, I've heard that many times.
You know, they'll say that I like indie or I like underground or like hip-hop.
I like
or
hip-hop.
EDM or something.
Yes, because that stereotype exists so strongly that all Korean people just adore K-pop that they even have to openly state, like, by the way, I'm not a K-pop fan. I think there's a certain image that comes to mind when you think of like super rabid K-pop fans. And no, I would say in general, Korean people are not nuts about K-pop. I would say primarily it's like middle school and high school.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, definitely elementary as well. Because when I was teaching these elementary kids, oh my gosh, I must have gone through a total of 300-400 like different students having taught them. And this is middle and elementary school. And one thing they all have in common is they all like K-pop in some way. So I think it's more like the kids are really into it as fans. But it's more like they're role models for them.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, think about it. It was similar. Like, you wouldn't go to the U.S. and ask any American on the street and be like, are you a huge NSYNC fan? Not everyone's going to be like, oh my gosh, I love NSYNC. I'm crazy for NSYNC. I've got the NSYNC haircut. Right? Because it's...
That's true.
You can't just put that out to everybody. Oh, all Americans love NSYNC. But Yeah.
Yeah, I guess kind of similar really to that. You couldn't really say that, right? Right.
Same with K-pop. You can't put that on every single person.
Yeah. But I do think that in general, Korea does have a sort of like this cultural pride, mm-hmm. especially now because, yeah. I mean, K-pop, I would say K-pop was more internal in the 90s and maybe early 2000s. It started to be maybe a little bit more, it started to globalize a little bit, mm-hmm. especially in Asia mm-hmm. in the early 2000s. And, you know, especially when BoA came out.
Right.
Yeah. During that time period, you had other Asian countries that started to embrace K-pop. Mm-hmm. And then you just had, I would even say in the early 2000s, late 90s, maybe you had some of those nerds like in America
like
who were...
you.
No, but I mean, it was different.
Oh, you
for
were
me.
Cool. I'm
no,
sorry.
No. Were. I was definitely a nerd, but like, it was different because I am Korean. Mm-hmm, so it's like mm-hmm. I knew about it through mm-hmm. obviously going to the Korean store and picking up those
or
tapes.
Or your
and
mom
CDs.
Watching P albums on TV. That's where I discovered
really?
P.
Your mom watched that?
Because my mom was watching P and he, you know, he takes off his clothes all the time and he's like dancing yeah. and the rain is like falling on him. And my mom was like, oh, this is P. And I was like, who? Is that then my yeah. mom was like 같이 보자 and so we were watching P and I was like oh this is great music
yeah but I mean like for the kids though like who weren't Korean uh-huh. but they were either into like Japanese anime or some of them actually got into mm-hmm. like K-pop especially mm-hmm. when the internet started to become a thing mm-hmm. and like mm-hmm. they were like online forums and stuff but it wasn't like very popular
right
until honestly, it wasn't until Psy. That's where it reached sort of the pinnacle. And then yeah. it got even bigger from there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, Psy was the breakthrough, really.
Yeah, globally.
I think he totally, well, he broke the internet for one. Mm-hmm. But I think that now people in Korea see K-pop as kind of like their most glamorous export. It's cool. And I think a lot of people feel kind of a national pride. It's like, wow, these artists who come from our country are mm-hmm. singing in our language and they're putting Korean imagery in the music and the music videos. And people love that.
Yeah.
That's cool. So I think rather than people are just avid listeners of K-pop, it's more of this recognition mm-hmm. and being like, we made this. Kudos to us.
Yeah. And it makes Korea a lot of money.
It does. Yeah, so it's cool. But something to keep in mind is that Korea has a really healthy indie music scene as well. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of times when people see K-pop, they just associate, oh, Korean music industry, K-pop. But in reality, underground, there's a lot of really cool music scenes happening. Mm-hmm. That just isn't globally as attractive yet. Okay, great. Let's move on to the next one then.
Okay. So the next one is... Everyone in Korea gets plastic surgery.
Everybody does.
Everybody is walking dolls.
Oh, that was weird.
Yeah.
And creepy. Well, is this true? You want me to start?
Sure. I'll let you take this one.
Let's begin with first, in Korean society, we know there's a huge, a fierce competition in getting the better job, getting better salary, you know, getting the right university degree. And looking like the better person. And this can also include your appearance being, quote unquote, more beautiful. Because outer beauty in Korea, it's not just about, you know, being pretty. It's also kind of equated here to your worth as an individual. If you're a pretty person or a good looking person, you must be a good person. You must also be hardworking and you must also be upright, you know, and faithful. This is unfortunately, you know, some equation given to personal value to how you look. And it does exist. I mean, every country has its own beauty ideals, of course, but we can objectively look at South Korea that has a more conformist attitude. People want to look. This is the beautiful look. We all want to look this way, mm-hmm. right? And not everybody looks that way naturally. And also in 2019, according to the International Society of Aesthetic Plastic Surgery, South Korea has the fifth highest number of plastic surgeons in the world. And South Korea is a very attractive location for people who want to get plastic surgery done just because it's done well. It's not as expensive because of the high competition. And South Korea is a great country to be in while you're, I guess, recovering, right?
Right.
So I think there's this perspective that plastic surgery is so prevalent. Every single person is getting it just because partly K-pop idols oftentimes do get plastic surgery to achieve that certain look. And there's just ads all over the place targeting women especially. And so that coupled with this societal pressures to look a certain way in order to get ahead, yeah, I think it does actually lead to pretty high numbers of plastic surgery. But something to note about Korean plastic surgery that's different, I think, than some other countries is I feel like, especially like in the US, trying to look bigger, like bigger lips,
yeah.
bigger bum, bigger bosom, is not quite the same plastic surgery that's happening in Korea.
Right.
It's still at a level where it's like barely noticeable. You want to be as natural as possible.
Right. But I think a lot of times you can tell when someone has some work done.
After you've seen many faces, yeah.
Yeah. But I would say sometimes, yeah, it is hard to tell with some that they've gotten some sort of work done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's, you know, I feel like a lot of times it's because people have this concept of plastic surgery as totally altering your look. But Korea is very well known and very well practiced in doing subtle changes just to tweak your appearance a little bit. So that is very popular here. So everyone getting plastic surgery in Korea, again, it's semi-debunked here, isn't it?
Yeah, but I would say the majority don't. Outside of, and we didn't really mention it too much, but like the eyelid surgery.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's probably the most common. I don't have stats, but that's probably the most common, especially with a lot of females, but even guys get it. But let's not even count that. Let's just say that's just sort of a normal thing. Outside of that, I would say the numbers are far less for the average person.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't see people walking around. Well, I guess it depends on what area you're in, but for the most part, you don't see people walking around like, oh, they probably got work done. It's like everyone just sort of looks natural.
Right. Yeah, so don't be scared to come here and think you're going to see the city of living dolls.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the next one.
The final myth is that Koreans are good at math.
Good at math. Okay. Are we? I'm including myself in this.
Yeah.
But I guess I really skew the graphs, right?
Yeah.
When I'm put on that, the average suddenly takes a huge dip. Is that how graphs work?
So to answer the question, based off of the example right beside me, not everyone's good at math.
No.
But I think in general, just the way Korean language works and how numbers work in Korea, because the way numbers are calculated in Korea is different. I still have trouble with like bigger numbers. Yeah, I think generally speaking, Koreans are better at math than, say, us in America.
So this is not a matter of your ethnicity.
No.
This is, in my opinion, purely one, society, standards, and two, the language itself. So let's take English into example. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Okay, those are the tens. And then it jumps into a whole new set of words to describe 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. Okay, those are all totally different words, which seemingly are unrelated to their single form, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. But Korean, and not just Korean, but Chinese, Japanese, and Turkish too, they explain numbers in a different way than what is done in English. Instead of having a totally new word for 11 to like 1-1 like that, 11, in Korean, it would just literally be 10-1, 10-1, which is the same 1 for 1 in the beginning. For 12, instead of a separate word for 12, you just have 10-2. Which is 10-2, which already when you break it down in your head like that, oh, 10-2. Oh, I can see it, visualize, it makes sense, 12. Of course, this is very difficult to explain in English about the Korean language number system, but it's how the language is written when explaining numbers. It's easier to calculate.
Yeah. Yeah, and also I think when, especially when you're talking about higher numbers, and it doesn't even have to be that high, we're talking like 50, hundreds, or like thousands, tens of thousands. Like you're literally, when you're talking about numbers or expressing numbers, you're literally like doing math just by saying those numbers, because you have just the way you express the numbers, it's like you're doing the math in your head.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which is why I have trouble with the bigger numbers, because I'm always like slowing down, like, okay, so if I want to say like 1 million, mm-hmm. I have to say like, what, like 110, and then do the math in my head to say 1 million or something like that.
Man,
right? Yeah, it's so like, I don't know. So I think once you're used to that and you get used to it at a young age, you're able to just process quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I agree. And something I also notice is with talking about money here is we speak about it in very big number forms. Just because, like, for example, in the US you have $1,
mm-hmm.
okay, 1.00. But in Korea, one, let's say the equivalent is 1,000.
Yeah.
Already. So, okay, so you have to be comfortable with juggling these huge numbers when in reality you might just be talking about, like, say, 10,000 USD. How would you express that in Korean? You're already using a bigger set of numbers happening. I feel like you just have to be a little bit more comfortable. But not only that, we already talked earlier about the study society here, you know, that culture.
Mm-hmm.
It exists specifically for math as well in Korea. Korea has a very high standard with mathematics, and a lot of that has to do with, again, this exam that students take after high school to get into university. Mathematics is a very significant part of that exam. So they take English classes very seriously, Korean very seriously, and math very seriously. And something that I learned, up till 2014, they didn't allow calculators in schools. So everything was just, it was manual calculation.
Wow.
So, which obviously would give you an edge.
Right. I mean, we couldn't use calculators a lot of times either growing up.
Oh, really?
But that was back in my day.
Oh.
Yeah. But I mean, I think for like complicated stuff, we were allowed to.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe like in my algebra classes, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
The article I read this on, it was pretty funny. I felt like they were throwing a little shade, because they were saying like, oh, Korea is, you know, number one and so good at math, and like singing all the praises, and then being like, this is what students think about having calculators. And the students that they interviewed were all like, I'm so worried we're going to lose our edge, blah, 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 blah. And then the very final sentence was, many other countries use calculators in the classrooms. For example, in the UK, they allow calculators in the classroom. UK's school system is ranking number 25th in the world. And they just ended it right there. It just was a little bit of unreasonable, unnecessary shade. You know, like, why even bringing UK into this? But anyway, that is one thing. So lack of calculators used in the math class, the language itself, and then this very intense focus on studying mathematics. So I honestly think this is probably true to a certain extent. One other thing to mention is the way the Korean schooling system is, a lot of it has to do with repetition. And when it comes to mathematics, formulas, calculations, a lot of it is just repetition.
Mm-hmm.
You have to know how the formula works. Do it over a million times, I'm sure you get it. But a lot of times you're not understanding the concept, but you can know how it's done.
Right.
So this repetition style of study, I think, is beneficial in the case of mathematics, but maybe not in the case of like the creative arts, for example.
Sure.
So there's pros and cons, right? Okay. Well, that was our fifth myth. Our fifth myth.
Fifth myth.
Yeah. And thank you guys for sticking with us so far. I have it's somewhat of a listener mail. If anybody has been watching the channel lately, you'll know that we had this great video, an interview we did with Himang, who is Korean and Indian. And he's currently in the Korean military, serving his national duty. And he called us recently, which was really nice, because at this point, you know, he's got very limited time to use the phone and still in his training. And so he's not allowed to have a cell phone, and there's no way I can contact him.
Mm-hmm.
But he contacted me. I just happened to be able to pick up the phone at the time. That's just how it happens. So we caught up with him. He's doing really well. His dad actually got in touch with me, which was very sweet. And he sent a photo of Himang in the military, which was nice. And then he followed up with this. And this is a little listener mail from Himang's dad. He says, hi, Becky. Himang called me last weekend, and I told him about the great video that the Halfway Project posted on June the 12th. He was very happy to know that it was very well received. He would like to call you if you could provide your number. Many thanks for the great job. It is proving to be greatly helpful to him. The best. So that was very sweet and very meaningful to hear that from him. So thank you so much for writing in. And if there's anyone else who would like to leave us listener mail, or if you have questions that you'd like to ask or topics you'd like us to explore, you can always get in touch at thehalfwayproject@gmail.com. And I guess we'll just end it here.
I'll just give a generic. Everyone stay safe, healthy, love your family, mm-hmm. love each other. Mm.
I see the halo descending on your head
yes.
as you're speaking. Okay, well, I guess that's it. Thanks so much for listening. And we'll see you next time. We are The Happy Project.